Side 5. I made the tea. As soon as I took it in and poured it, she spoke.
I want to say something, she said. It's got to be said. I was listening. You wanted to kiss me out there, didn't you?
I'm sorry, I said. As usual, I started to blush.
First of all, I should like to thank you for not doing so, because I don't want you to kiss me. I realize I'm at your mercy. I realize I'm very lucky you're so decent about this particular thing.
It won't happen again, I said.
But that's what I wanted to say. If it does happen again, and worse, and you have to give way to it, I want you to promise something.
It won't happen again.
Not to do it in a mean way. I mean, don't knock me unconscious or chloroform me again or anything. I shan't struggle. I'll let you do what you like.
It won't happen again, I said. I forgot myself. I can't explain.
The only thing is, if you do anything like that, I shall never, never respect you. I shall never, never speak to you again. Do you understand?
I wouldn't expect anything else, I said. I was red as a beetroot by then. She held out her hand. I shook it. I don't know how I got out of the room. She had me all at sixes and sevens that evening. Well, every day it was the same. I went down between 8 and 9. I got a breakfast, emptied the bucket. Sometimes we talked a bit. She gave me any shopping she wanted done. Sometimes I stayed home, but I went out most days on account of the fresh vegetables and milk she liked. Most mornings I cleaned up the house after I got back from Lewis. Then a lunch. Then usually we sat and talked for a bit, or she played the records I brought back, or I sat and watched her draw. She got her own tea. I don't know why. We sort of came to an agreement not to be together then. Then there was supper. And after supper we often talked a bit more. Sometimes she made me welcome. She usually wanted her walk in the outer cellar. Sometimes she made me go away as soon as supper was over. I took photos whenever she would let me. She took some of me. I got her in a lot of poses, all nice ones, of course. I wanted her to wear special clothes, but I didn't like to ask.
I don't know why you want all these photos, she always said. You can see me every day. So nothing happened, really. There were just all those evenings we sat together. And it doesn't seem possible that it'll never be again. It was like we were the only two people in the world. No one will ever understand how happy we were. Well, just me, really. But there were times when I consider she didn't mind, in spite of what she said, if she thought about it. I could sit there all night watching her. Just the shape of her head, and the way the hair fell from it with a special curve, so graceful it was. Like the shape of a swallowtail. It was like a veil or a cloud. It would lie like silk strands, all untidy and loose, but lovely over her shoulders. I wish I had words to describe it like a poet would, or an artist. She had a way of throwing it back when it had fallen too much forward. It was just a simple, natural movement. Sometimes I wanted to say to her, please do it again. Please let your hair fall forward and toss it back. Only, of course, it would have been stupid. Everything she did was delicate like that. Just turning a page. Standing up or sitting down. Drinking. Smoking. Anything. Even when she did things considered ugly, like yawning or stretching, she made it seem pretty. The truth was she couldn't do ugly things. She was too beautiful. She was always so clean, too. She never smelt anything but sweet and fresh. Unlike some women I could mention. She ate her dirt as much as I do, although she used to laugh at me about it. She told me once it was a sign of madness to want everything clean. If that is so, then we must both have been mad. Of course, it wasn't all peace and light. Several times she tried to escape, which just showed. Luckily, I was always on the lookout. One day, she nearly had me. She was dead cunning. When I went in, she was being sick, and she looked a real mess. I kept on saying, what's wrong? What's wrong? But she just lay there like she was in pain. It's appendicitis. She got out in the end. How do you know? I asked. I thought I'd die in the night, she said. She spoke like she hardly could. I said, it could be other things. but she just turned her face to the wall and said, "Oh, God." Well, when I got over the shock, I saw it might be just her game. The next thing was she was all doubled up like in a spasm, and then she sat up and looked at me and said she would promise anything, but she must have a doctor. Or go to hospital, she said. "It's the end for me," I said. "You tell them." "I promise. I promise," she said, really convincing she could certainly act. "I'll make you a cup of tea," I said, and wanted time to think. But she doubled up again. There was all the sick on the floor. I remembered Aunt Annie said with appendicitis it could kill. Only a year back, the boy next door got it. And she said then they waited too long. Aunt Annie knew all the time, and it was a wonder he never died. So I had to do something. I said, "There's a house with a telephone down the lane. I'll run down." "Take me to the hospital," she said. "It's safer for you." "What's it matter?" I said. I was really in despair. "It's the end. It's goodbye," I said. "Until the police court." I could act too. Then I rushed out like I was very upset. I left the door open and the outer door, and I just waited there. And out she came in a minute. No more real than I was. No trouble. She just gave me one look and went on back down. I looked nasty just to give her a scare. She had moods that changed so quick that I often got left behind. She liked to get me stumbling after her, as she said one day, "Poor Caliban, always stumbling after Miranda," she said. Sometimes she would call me Caliban, sometimes Ferdinand. Sometimes she would be nasty and cutting. She would sneer at me and mimic me and make me desperate and ask me questions I couldn't answer. Then other times she would be really sympathetic. I felt she understood me like no one since Uncle Dick, and I could put up with everything. I remember a lot of little things. One day, she was sitting showing me the secrets of some paintings. Secrets were the things you had to think about to see. The secrets of proportion and harmony, she called them. We sat with the book between us and she talked about the pictures. We sat on the bed. She made me get cushions and a rug on it for the day. Close, but not touching. I made sure of that after the events in the garden. But one evening she said, "Don't be so stiff. I shan't kill you if your sleeve touches mine." "All right," I said, but I didn't move. Then she moved. So our arms touched, our shoulders. All the time she went on talking and talking about the picture we were looking at. I thought she wasn't thinking about the touching. But a few pages later she suddenly looked at me. "You're not listening." "Yes, I am," I said. "No, you're not. You're thinking about touching me. You're all stiff. Relax." It was no good. She got me all tense. She stood up. She was wearing a narrow blue skirt I bought her, and a big black jumper and a white blouse. Colours really suited her. She stood in front of me, and after a bit she said, "Oh, God." Then she went and beat her fist against the wall. She used to do that sometimes. "I've got a friend who kisses me every time he sees me, and he doesn't mean anything. His kisses are meaningless. He kisses everybody. He's the other side of you. You don't have any contact with anybody, and he has it with everybody. You're both equally sick." I was smiling. I used to smile when she attacked me as a sort of defense. "Don't put on that ghastly smile." "Not much else I can do. You're always right." "But I don't want always to be right. Tell me I'm wrong." "Oh, you're right," I said. "You know you're right." "Oh, Ferdinand," she said. And then twice more. "Ferdinand, Ferdinand." And she sort of prayed to heaven and acted someone in great pain. So I had to laugh. But suddenly she was all serious, all pretending it. "It's not a little thing. It's terrible that you can't treat me as a friend. Forget my sex. Just relax." "I'll try," I said. But then she wouldn't sit by me again. She leant against the wall, reading another book. Another day, it was downstairs, she just screamed. For no reason at all. I was fixing up a painting she'd done and wanted to see up on the wall, and suddenly, sitting on the bed, she screamed. Blood-curdling it was, and I jumped round and dropped the tape, and she just laughed. "What's up?" I said. "I just felt like a good scream," she said. She was unpredictable. She was always criticizing my way of speaking. One day, I remember, she said, "You know what you do? You know how rain takes the color out of everything? That's what you do to the English language. You blur it every time you open your mouth." That is just one sample of many of the way she treated me. Another day, she got round me on the subject of her parents. She'd been on for days about how they would be sick with worry and how mean I was not letting them know. I said I couldn't take the risk. But one day after supper, she said, "I'll tell you how you do it without any risk. You wear gloves. You buy paper and some envelopes from Woolworths. You dictate a letter to me to write. You go to the nearest big town and post it. You can't be traced. It might be any Woolworths in the country." Well, she kept on at me so about it that one day I did what she suggested and bought some paper and envelopes. That evening I gave her a sheet and told her to write. "I am safe and not in danger," I said. She wrote it, saying, "That's filthy English, but never mind." "You write what I say," I answered, and went on. "Do not try to find me. It is impossible." "Nothing's impossible," she said, cheeky as usual. "I am being well looked after by a friend," I went on. Then I said, "That's all. Just put your name." "Can't I say Mr. Clegg sends his regards?" "Very funny," I said. She wrote something more and handed me the sheet of paper. It said, "See you soon, love, Nanda," at the bottom. "What's this?" I asked. "My baby name. They'll know it's me." "I prefer Miranda," I said. It was the most beautiful for me. When she'd written the envelope, I put the sheet in, and then luckily I looked inside. At the bottom of the envelope there was a piece of paper no bigger than half a cigarette paper. I don't know how, but she must have had it ready and slipped it in. I opened it out and looked at her. She was bold as brass. She just leant back in the chair and stared at me. She'd written very small, with a sharp pencil, but the letters were clear. It wasn't like her other note. It said, "D.M. Kidnapped by madman. F. Clegg. Clerk from annex who won pool. Prisoner in cellar. Lonely timbered cottage. Date outside 1621. Hilly country. 2 hours London. So far safe. Frightened. M." I was really angry and shocked. I didn't know what to do. In the end, I said, "Are you frightened?" She didn't say anything. She just nodded. "But what have I done?" I asked. "Nothing. That's why I'm frightened." "I don't understand." She looked down. "I'm waiting for you to do something." "I've promised. Then I'll promise again," I said. "You get all high and mighty because I don't take your word. I don't know why it's different for me."
"I'm sorry."
"I trusted you," I said. "I thought you realised I was being kind." "Well, I'm not going to be used. I don't care about your letter." I put it in my pocket. There was a long silence. I knew she was looking at me, but I wouldn't look at her. Then suddenly she got up and stood in front of me and put her hands on my shoulders, so I had to look at her. She made me look down into her eyes. I can't explain it. When she was sincere, she could draw the soul out of me. I was wax in her hands. She said, "Now you're behaving like a little boy. You forget that you're keeping me here by force. I admit it is quite a gentle force, but it is frightening."
"As long as you keep your word, I'll keep mine," I said. I'd gone red, of course.
"But I've not given you my word not to try and escape, have I?"
"All you live for is the day you see the last of me," I said. "I'm just a nobody still, aren't I?"
She turned half away. "I want to see the last of this house. Not of you."
"And mad," I said. "Do you think a madman would have treated you the way I have? I'll tell you what a madman would have done. He'd have killed you by now, like that fella Christie. I suppose you think I'm going for you with a carving knife or something." I was really fed up with her that day. "How daft can you get? All right, you think I'm not normal keeping you here like this. Perhaps I'm not. But I can tell you there'd be a blooming lot more of this if more people had the money and the time to do it. Anyway, there's more of it now than anyone knows. The police know," I said. "The figures are so big they don't dare say them."
She was staring at me.
It was like we were complete strangers. I must have looked funny. It was the most I'd ever said.
Don't look like that, she said. What I fear in you is something you don't know is in you.
What?
I asked. I was still angry. I don't know. It's lurking somewhere about in this house. This room, this situation, waiting to spring. In a way, we're on the same side, against it.
That's just talk.
We all want things we can't have. Being a decent human being is accepting that.
We all take what we can get, and if we haven't had much most of our life, we make up for it while the going's good, I said. Of course you wouldn't know about that.
Then she was smiling at me, as if she was much older than me. You need psychiatric treatment.
The only treatment I need is you to treat me like a friend.
I am. I am, she said. Can't you see that? There was a big silence. Then she broke it. Don't you feel this has gone on long enough?
No,
I said. Won't you let me go now?
No!
You could gag me and tie me up and drive me back to London. I'd not tell a soul.
No!
But there must be something you want to do with me.
I just want to be with you, all the time.
In bed?
I've told you, no!
But you want to. I'd rather not speak about it. She shut up then.
I don't allow myself to think of what I know is wrong, I said. I don't consider it nice.
You are extraordinary.
Thank you.
If you let me go, I should want to see you, because you interest me very much.
Like you go to the zoo, I asked.
To try and understand you.
You'll never do that.
I may as well admit I liked the mystery man side of our talk. I felt it showed her she didn't know everything.
I don't think I ever should.
Then suddenly she was kneeling in front of me, with her hands up high, touching the top of her head, being all oriental. She did it 3 times.
Will the mysterious great master accept apologies of very humble slave?
I'll think about it, I said.
Humble slave, very sorry for unkind letter.
I had to laugh. She could act anything. She stayed there, kneeling with her hands on the floor beside her, more serious, giving me the look.
Will you send a letter, then?
I made her ask again, but then I gave in. It was nearly the big mistake of my life. The next day, I drove up to London. I told her I was going there like a fool, and she gave me a list of things to buy. There was a lot. I knew later to keep me busy. I had to buy special foreign cheese and go to some place in Soho where they had German sausages she liked, and there were some records and clothes and other things. She wanted pictures by some artist. It had to be just this one name. I was really happy that day. Not a cloud in the sky. I thought she'd forgotten about the 4 weeks. Well, not forgotten, but accepted I would want more. Talk about a dream world. I didn't get back till tea time, and of course went down straight to see her. But I knew at once something was wrong. She didn't look at all pleased to see me, and she didn't even look at all the things I'd bought. I soon saw what it was. It was 4 stones she'd made loose, to make a tunnel, I suppose. There was dirt on the steps. I got one out easy. All the time she sat on the bed not looking. Behind it was stone, so it was all right. But I saw her again. The sausages and the special pictures and all that. All the soft soap. You tried to escape, I said.
Oh, shut up!
She cried. I began looking for the thing she'd done it with. Suddenly something flew past me and clattered on the floor. It was an old 6-inch nail. I don't know how she got hold of it.
That's the last time I leave you alone for so long, I said.
I can't trust you anymore. She just turned. She wouldn't speak.
And I was dead scared she'd go off on a hunger strike again, so I didn't insist.
I let her then. Later I brought her a supper. She didn't talk, so I left her.
The next day she was all right again.
though she didn't talk except a word about the escape that nearly was. She never mentioned it after again. But I saw she had a bad scratch on her wrist, and she made a face when she tried to hold a pencil to draw. I didn't post the letter. The police are dead cunning with some things. A chap I knew in Town Hall's brother worked at Scotland Yard. They only needed a pinch of dust, and they would tell you where you came from and everything. Of course, when she asked me, I went red. I said it was because I knew she didn't trust me, etc., which she seemed to accept. It may not have been kind to her parents, but from what she said, they weren't up to much, and you can't think of everybody. First things first, as they say. I did the same thing over the money she wanted me to send to the H-bomb movement. I wrote out a check and showed it to her, but I didn't send it. She wanted proof, the receipt, but I said I'd sent it anonymous. I did it to make her feel better, writing the check, but I don't see the point of wasting money on something you don't believe in. I know rich people give sums, but in my opinion, they do it to get their names published, or to dodge the taxmen. For every bath, I had to screw in the planks again. I didn't like to leave them up all the time. All went off well. Once, it was very late, 11, so I took her gag off when she went in. It was a very windy night, a proper gale blowing. When we came down, she wanted us to sit in the sitting room. I got ticked off for calling it a lounge. Hands bound, of course. There seemed no harm. So I put the electric fire on. She told me imitation logs were the end. I ought to have real log fires, like I did later. We sat there a bit. She sat on the carpet, drying her washed hair, and of course I just watched her. She was wearing some slacks I bought her. Very attractive, she looked, all in black except for a little red scarf. She had her hair all day before she washed it in two pigtails. One of the great pleasures for me was seeing how her hair was each day. Before the fire, however, it was loose and spread, which I liked best. After a time, she got up and walked round the room, all restless. She kept on saying the word bored, over and over again. Sounded funny, what with the wind howling outside and all. Suddenly, she stopped in front of me. Amuse me, do something. Well, what? I asked. Photos? But she didn't want photos. I don't know. Sing, dance, anything. I can't sing. All dance. Well, tell me all the funny stories you know. I don't know any, I said. It was true, I couldn't think of one. But you must do. I thought all men had to know dirty jokes. I wouldn't tell you one if I knew it. Why not? They're for men. What do you think women talk about? I bet I know more dirty jokes than you do. I wouldn't be surprised, I said. Oh, you're like Mercury. You won't be picked up. She walked away, but suddenly she snatched a cushion off a chair, turned and kicked it straight at me. I, of course, was surprised. I stood up. And then she did the same with another. And then another that missed and knocked a copper kettle off the side table. Easy on, I said. Come now, tortoise, she cried. A literary quotation, I think it was. Anyway, almost at once, she pulled a jug thing off the mantelpiece and threw that at me. I think she called catch, but I didn't, and it broke against the wall. Steady on, I said. But another jug followed. All the time she was laughing. There was nothing vicious exactly. She just seemed to be mad, like a kid. There was a pretty green plate with a cottage moulded in relief that hung by the window, and she had that off the wall and smashed that. I don't know why. I always liked that plate, and didn't like to see her break it, so I shouted really sharp, stop it! All she did was to put her thumb to her nose and make a rude sign and put her tongue out. She was just like a street boy. I said, you ought to know better. You ought to know better, she said, making fun of me. And then she said, please come round this side, and then I can get at those beautiful plates behind you. There were two by the door. Unless you'd like to smash them yourself. Stop it! I said again, that's enough! But suddenly she came behind the sofa going for the plates. I got between her and the door. She tried to dodge under my arm, however I caught hers. Then she suddenly changed. Let go, she said all quiet. Of course I didn't. I thought she might be joking still. But then suddenly she said, let go. In such a nasty voice that I did at once. Then she went and sat down by the fire. After a while, she said, get a broom, I'll sweep up. I'll do it tomorrow. I want to clear up. Very, my lady. I'll do it. It's your fault. Of course. You're the most perfect specimen of petty bourgeois squareness I've ever met. Am I? Yes, you are. You despise the real bourgeois classes for all their snobbishness and their snobbish voices and ways. You do, don't you? Yet all you put in their place is a horrid little refusal to have nasty thoughts, or do nasty things, or be nasty in any way. Do you know that every great thing in the history of art and every beautiful thing in life is actually what you call nasty, or has been caused by feelings that you would call nasty? By passion, by love, by hatred, by truth. Do you know that?
I don't know what you're talking about, I said.
Yes, you do. Why do you keep on using these stupid words? Nasty, nice, proper, right. Why are you so worried about what's proper? You're like a little old maid who thinks marriage is dirty and everything except cups of weak tea in a stuffy old room is dirty. Why'd you take all the life out of life? Why'd you kill all the beauty?
I never had your advantages, that's why.
You can change. You're young. You've got money. You can learn. And what have you done? You've had a little dream. The sort of dream I suppose little boys have and masturbate about. And you fall over yourself being nice to me so that you won't have to admit to yourself that the whole business of my being here is nasty, nasty, nasty!
She stopped sudden then. This is no good, she said.
I might be talking Greek.
I understand, I said. I'm not educated. She almost shouted.
You're so stupid! Perth!
You have money. As a matter of fact, you aren't stupid. You could come whatever you liked. Only you've got to shove the past. You've got to kill your aunt and the house you live in and the people you live with. You've got to be a new human being. She sort of pushed her face at me, as if it was something easy I could do, but wouldn't. Some hope, I said.
Look what you could do. You could collect pictures. I'd tell you what to look for. I'd introduce you to people who would tell you about art collecting. Think of all the poor artists you could help instead of massacring butterflies like a stupid schoolboy.
Some very clever people collect butterflies, I said.
Oh, clever. What's the use of that? Are they human beings?
What do you mean? I asked.
If you have to ask, I can't give you the answer.
Then she said,
I always seem to end up by talking down to you. I hate it. It's you. You always squirm one step lower than I can go.
She went like that at me sometimes. Of course I forgave her, though it hurt at the time. What she was asking for was someone different to me. Someone I could never be. For instance, all that night after she said I could collect pictures, I thought about it. I dreamed myself collecting pictures, having a big house with famous pictures hanging on the walls, and people coming to see them. Miranda there too, of course. But I knew all the time it was silly. I'd never collect anything but butterflies. Pictures don't mean anything to me. I wouldn't be doing it because I wanted, so there wouldn't be any point. You can never see that.
End of side 5.